Advocate, can we proceed to the next clause?
Thank you, Chair. Yes. So the next clause, this ties in with that temporary right that we were talking about before of broadcasters. And if our recommendation is accepted in 12B1C, that we revert to the wording of the bill before it was advertised, otherwise we don't use the Canadian Act wording, then this will also be deleted. What this deals with is just to say that that specific subsection does not apply when a collecting society, when there is in fact a license available from a collecting society. So it is just something that's consequential. And if the one is not taken on, then the other should not be taken on either. Let me maybe just pause in case someone wants to add on that.
Members?
Honourable
Chuckle?
Yeah, I wanted to check that we made a recommendation last time that is there any other simpler word that can be used instead of that? Did the advocate have a look at it?
Advocate?
Thank you, Shay. The wording that we looked at now is for the wording of the bill to be retained. And it's very difficult to, you know, the problem with copyright is that it is something that's complex in its own. And we do try our best at in everything that we draft for it to be stated as simply as possible. So yes, the wording of the bill, reverting to the wording of the bill, would accomplish some of that. The wording of the Canadian Act was a lot more complex, and it referred to matters that we did not have in the South African context. So yes, in that sense, reverting to the wording of the bill would assist.
So are you saying then that we are looking at a... Because what Honourable Tswaku is asking is that the word ephemeral, I think, be replaced. Let me just take a hand from Honourable Burns Namashe, then I'll hand back to you. Honourable Burns Namashe.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Well, Chair, I probably hold a different view. Remember, although it is important for legislation to be simple and readily understandable to the ordinary citizens, but there are certain jargons and nomenclature that legal people understand it better. Remember, when it is argued before courts, it's not argued by ordinary people. It's argued by legal gurus who better understand this concept. So I would not be of the view that we use terms for our own understanding. We must understand that it does not only end with us. At the end of the day, if there are disputes, those will be argued by advocates and be adjudicated by judges. And they understand the nomenclature. They understand the jargon. What is important for us is when we interpret, we translate these legislations into languages that are understood by ordinary people. Otherwise, I would not accept a view where we use substandard language in terms of the fraternity. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate.
Thank you, Jane. Just to come back to the first question, Yes. So the word ephemeral is something that comes from the Canadian Act. And that act's wording has had some words in that we don't use in our law. So that was part of the concern with using the Canadian Act wording. So reverting to the wording of the bill prior to the advert will resolve this issue as well. We don't use ephemeral at all. We simply refer to broadcasting, we refer to the period, we refer to what can be done with the work that was reproduced. So definitely there. And then I think the second was more a comment. But I can confirm that we do try and use as simple and plain language as possible. But yes, we need to keep in mind existing usage of phrases so that we don't fall into a trap that there's a misinterpretation of what the act is trying to say.
Thank you, Honourable Thring.
No, Chair. Maybe just on a lighter note, Honourable Burns has just complicated matters by using the word nomenclature.
Don't be jealous, Honourable Thring. Okay, thank you, Advocate. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Then, Chair, the next one is also a consequential amendment. This one comes from personal copies again. So what we have here is, and our proposal is that we revert back to the wording of the bill. So with the strictness that the definition of lawfully acquired would have brought, we wanted to make it clear that the factors associated with making a personal copy does not apply to other exceptions where you're making reproductions. But if the committee accepts that we don't define lawfully acquired, then it is our recommendation that this paragraph also be removed. So I'll just pause there, Chair.
Thank you, members. Okay, I think you can proceed. There are no hands.
Thank you, Chair. Then we move on to the next section, 12C. So now we are done with the list of exceptions and we come to specific exceptions. So with 12C, we first had a layout correction. So if I can show members on this bottom document, what we had was this phrase here was there. And what happens with that is that you can only read this phrase in connection with B, whereas this phrase should apply to both A and to B. And if in order to do that, it should look like that. So in other words, you list A, you list B, and then with the indentation removed and separately, you have this as long as there is no commercial significance to these acts. Now, that was just a layout correction, and it's our recommendation that be retained. But in respect of Section 12C, there was also a further proposal to add the wording of the three-step test. Now, the concern that was raised here is that, first off, when we look at subsection 1, we already have fairness criteria built in. So we already have integral and essential to a technical process. The purpose is to enable the transmission to adapt. So there's very specific things set out that will determine whether this is a fair use. And there may also not be a commercial significance to these acts. So the concern was by adding the specific wording of the three-step test, you added to this this exception and you made it very difficult for this exception to have any value. And our proposal is that, in fact, the wording of the three-step test here should be removed. And then, Chair, if I may, because the same argument goes in respect of 12D, where D dealing with, there's more than one thing there, but also dealing with reproduction of the work for educational and academic activities, that the three-step test be included. And the proposal is the same. You've got so many tests already that will determine fairness that to add this layer of a three-step test into this specific exception means that you're almost nullifying the exception, because it will be unclear to the user when and what is required of them before they can make such a reproduction. So, Chair, if I can then pause in respect of the three-step test, insofar as the, its inclusion in 12C and in 12D is concerned.
Thank you, members. I think it's, there's no hands. Can we move then?
Thank you, Chair. Then on 12D as well, the issue of fair practice. What we have in 12D subsection 1 is that, sorry, that's 12C. Let me just move to 12D. We already have the rest of 12D already speaks to fair practice. In fact, if we go to 12D, I hope I've got it here, 8, yes. It says subsections 1 to 6. We require fair practice, sorry, yeah, 1 to 6, compatible with fair practice. So we don't need to have fair practice in subsection 1 as well. So we can delete here. The question, of course, also was whether it should be extend justified by the purpose or fair practice. So the first, there's two issues. The one is, should it be in subsection 1? And the answer is no, because it's already duplicated in subsection 8. But then whether we should have specifically three-step, we have dealt with, apologies, so I'm just going, the name of the author, practical, I'll speak to that. Here we go. The extent justified by the purpose. The recommendation that we use both fair practice and the extent justified by the purpose, because in Byrne Article 10, when it speaks to educate, when it speaks to teaching, but when we look at the guideline, it's in to Byrne, it indicates that teaching includes academic activity, education. And then, so to qualify for not to qualify, to align the bill as closely as possible to the treaties, it is recommended that we use then in 12D both fair practice and extend justified by the purpose. The other issues in 12D deals with the issue of, that was just the three-step test. As far as is practicable, here our recommendation is, because this is something that is new, it is a new exception, that we do include the words as far as is practicable in respect of the name of the author, that we add if it appears on the work, and then that we indicate as far as is practicable and the extent justified by the purpose. Apologies, I think my wording here is wrong. I will just correct that. This should be compatible with fair practice and that the extent shall not exceed. I apologize about that. I must have missed that. So that in respect of teaching, both of these be used. And then, Chair, if I may also maybe just finish with 12D, because it's all more or less the same issue. This is where we moved 12B1B, because it deals with teaching. And we propose here, this was B in 12B1, paragraph B. This was the wording there. So it's been moved here, and we just propose that it be extend justified by the purpose and compatible with fair practice. And that in this instance, because this specific exception is already in the Act, that we do not add as far as is practicable in respect of the name of the author. So, Chair, that was a bit of a mouthful, but in respect of 12D, so it would be the issue of using both fair practice and the extent justified by the purpose to not include practicable in respect of subsection 9, but to include it in respect of the rest of the section, and then to delete it in subsection 1 because we already have in subsection 8 making it applicable to all of these subsections, that would just be a duplication. I will not, the wording that you can see deleted here speaks to the three-step test that we've now already spoken to. So I'll just pause there, Chair, on the issues of practicable and compatible with fair practice and extent shall not exceed the extent justified by the purpose. Thank you.
Thank you, members. You have it. It's quite a mouthful. I don't see any hands, advocates. I think you've been very clear. You can proceed.
Thank you, Chair. I'm glad I was clear, because that was definitely a mouthful there. Chair, the next one, clause 19, deals with gender-neutral drafting. So like I said, I'm not going to go into that. That was something that was accepted by members of the committee, that we will do that technical amendment. And just there, if members want to see what it is, and instead of he or she is, we say they are entitled to perform. Then section 19C is the next one. And what we have here is that there was a concern about this phrase, for commercial purposes. And the proposal was that it be deleted because it is a duplication. But the question then remained whether it should be this whole phrase that is deleted or only this phrase that is deleted. Because there's a big difference. If we just delete the phrase in green font, it means that you may not allow any copies to be made, period. But if you delete all of it, you will delete a duplication. And the proposal from both the department and myself is that, yes, it is in fact so. It's not that we want to limit all copies. It must only be those that are for commercial purposes. In respect of this, the 19C specifically deals with libraries, archives, museums, or galleries. So it's in a very specific context. And then our proposal here is that we retain the words for commercial purposes so that it is clear if a copy is being allowed by a library, archive, museum or gallery, it may not be for commercial purposes. So that is on 19C, so let me just pause there for a bit.
Thank you, members. There are no hands, you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. In 19D, this is the clause that deals with, sorry, I see there was also some gender-neutral drafting here in 19. But it just to show the it's his or her changing to they. 19D is speaking about persons with a disability. So the first issue here was, because we have this inclusion of authorized entity, and because we were making, for authorized entity, you will see a little bit later on, there's a provision for things to be prescribed. We thought that it would be good to then take this phrase out, this as may be prescribed, because we are going to prescribe it anyway. But the public then pointed out that what you are actually doing is you are limiting a category of persons here. So in other words, we have any person including an authorized entity. So either you are going to have a situation where we don't know who this person is, or you're going to limit it so that it's only authorized entities. And that was not the intention. To give this clarity that this person may be someone as is prescribed by the minister, we propose that as may be prescribed is retained. And then there was just a grammatical proposal that the word that changes to who. And of course, including an authorized entity, that already it goes back to the previous amendments that were made and it wasn't advertised, but the inclusion of the definition. This is then where that authorized entity will play a role. So let me perhaps just pause there in respect of retaining prescribed, so that there's persons that may be prescribed and authorized entities that will be prescribed by way of regulation. I think on that point, let me pause there.
Thank you, advocate. Members? Okay. You can proceed. There are no hands.
Thank you, Chair. Then in respect of 1B, And this is actually where we did do some plain language drafting. The way 1B read was a bit confusing, and I will accept criticism that it may be still confusing, but like I say, it's a bit of a complex bill that we're dealing with. But what we want to say is that when you make an accessible format copy, you need to respect the integrity of the original work. We understand that you are not going to, in an accessible format copy, when you copy a book, a literary work, it's not going to look the same as the original work. It's going to be much thicker, for instance. It's going to have raised, like Braille, you know, raised dots instead of words. We understand all of that. But the content then of the original work, the author, etc., all of that must be respected. So you can't go and take liberties in this accessible format copy and, you know, take paragraphs away unless you indicate that it is an abbreviated copy. So that is what we're trying to say here. And the wording then we just changed to say that you must respect the integrity of the original work, but taking due consideration of what is needed to make these changes. And there weren't any comments received on this, Chair, but I'll just pause there because I think the next one is a bit more contentious. Let me just pause there for a moment.
Thank you, members. There's no hands, you may proceed, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the next one is not that difficult. It's dealing with subsection 2. It's just, again, the issue of making things a little bit clearer, adding authorized entity. So all of these blue bits were just to make provision for this authorized entity so that your sentences can still read well. So that is all that's more consequential. So I'm not going to stop there. 3A, and this is where we start having a lot of comments that came in. On 3A itself, there weren't a lot of comments because we had that and who, the issue of grammar, including the authorized entity, making it available to a person with a disability. This wasn't so much contention, and this is really just consequential in respect of authorized entity. But in respect of B, there was a lot of concern. And the issue here was that the treaty language refers to a defense. And when we have legislation, we first have to put an obligation there before you can have a defense. We can't just speak to a defense. So we had to find wording that would be aligned to the treaty language, but doesn't put an obligation. So the way it read was that a person contemplated in A, so this is now the person who is importing and exporting, may only do so if that person know or has reasonable grounds to believe that copy will only be used with a person to aid persons with a disability. And the concern raised by the public was that they read this proposed wording to mean that there's an obligation on the importer or exporter to do an investigation and see if there are, if it is safe to import, export, and, you know, that they will have to go in and almost do an impossible investigation and see if anyone might be using this copy. And that was not the intention. The intention was not to put an obligation on the importer or exporter. The intention was to indicate that if you import and export and you're aware that someone is going to use this for something else, then you shouldn't be importing for that person, because that's not the purpose of an accessible format copy. So the proposed correction is that, let's say then that you may not export or import if you know or if you had reason to know that it will be used for purposes other than to aid persons with a disability. I also put this wording past my team. I've got four legislative drafters on my team. I also put it past them and explained the concern to them, and they were all of the view that this wording would be not putting that obligation on the person, and that it would be aligned with the treaty. So that is the proposal from my officer's side. If there is still a concern from the committee that this might not be speaking sufficiently to the treaty, we can look at the wording. We can also specifically add a defense, that would read exactly as the treaty reads. But like I say, from my side, I have checked with my whole team, we're of the view that this wording would suffice and would address the concerns of the public. There's just one further change that I want to speak to here before I pause, and that is we has reason to believe, we try to tie this in with some of the other sections in the bill, but the proposal was that the treaty talks about knowing. So to rather change this to has reason to know, and that I don't have a problem with. I would actually prefer no as well. For me, it's a much more objective test. So, yes, let me first pause there, Chair, because this was something that had a lot of concerns from the public.
Members, any comments, clarities? No. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the next one is then actually a little bit easier. That is the issue of including the name including the name of the author on the accessible format copy. And our proposal is that we don't include, as far as is practicable. We're dealing here with an accessible format copy. It is something that you should be able to indicate who the name of the author is, or who the author is, what the source is of this of the original work. So I'm not going to pause there. I'll pause just after the next one, because I think the name and practicality, that is kind of sorted. What we have here is that there was also, in respect of 19D4B, a concern that you cannot say that this import should be for where the use is exclusive by a person with a disability. Now, there's two things that speak to this specific paragraph. Firstly, this is implied when we look at this wording in subsection 3. We already say here that it may not be used by someone else. So we really do not need to repeat it in subsection 4. The other option is that we indicate that it is by a person who aids someone with a person with a disability. But because it repeats, it is our proposal that it simply be deleted. It is not necessary. We don't have to create any confusion with this. It is already implied by subsection 3B. So yeah, I'll pause there on 4, just in respect of the name of the author and in respect of deleting this specific paragraph B, because it is duplicating something.
Thank you, members. I don't see any hands. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Then there's some gender-neutral drafting, but I will not pause on that. The same with clauses 21, 23, 24, 25. Now just scroll through it so that the committee can see, that in the bits in blue is where we try and explain it. If I may just explain, if members already know this, then I do apologize, but in case there is perhaps a member who doesn't, this means that this word in the original text will be removed. So the bold between square brackets means it will be removed. This is the wording of the bill. So the bill is already inserting some things and deleting some things. The bill is already deleting written or oral and replacing it by verbal or in writing. Now, the bill proposed the addition of or her. So what I'm simply doing here, and my C list, my amendment list, will reflect that this phrase should be deleted. So that is just what's going on there. In case members were wondering if why am I doing things so differently in different things. These were just, like I say, all the gender-neutral draftings. Then we get to offences. Chair, the first one is quite easy, is this and or. As I explained before, if you want both to apply, then you have and. If you want one to apply, then you have or. And we would like both communicate the work and make the work available to be offences on their own. So you don't want it to be communicated and made available before it's an offence. Each should stand on their own. So our recommendation is for that to change to or. The other proposal in respect of 5A is that if we say of the owner of the copyright, that this authority must come from the owner of the copyright, we might end up in a situation where the owner of the copyright is a company and there's some delegations in place from the shareholders that the CFO may give the necessary permission, or the COO probably. Then we have a problem that it's not the owner of the copyright that gave the authority. So our proposal is that we say the necessary authority. And of course, this will be a question of fact. And if it is in a company, we will look at the delegations and we will see, yes, it was the COO who was supposed to do it, or whatever the requirements would be of that specific company. Then the other issue here, specifically on 5A, was in respect of commercial. And the proposal was to delete for commercial purposes. Now, the question that must be asked is, if we communicate the work to the public by wire or wireless means, or we make it available to the public by wire or wireless means, whether if that is done for non-commercial purposes, is that serious enough that it should constitute an offence? And the department's view was, and they went to have a look at this, they went to have a look at the consequences, and they're of the view that yes, it is serious enough that if you communicate the work to the public or you make it available to the public, even if you don't have any profit to be made from that, you are still causing such an impact that it should be deterred by making it an offence. So, Chair, I think I will first pause there. The last one was just that the person should know that there is an infringement. So that just brings out the element of intent a bit further. So let me first pause there in respect of 5A, and then we'll go on to the other two offences.
Thank you. Honourable Sring.
Chair, thank you. Just with regards to this particular infringement, at certain times of the year, let's take Christmas as an example. One gets lots of songs, whether it's Boney M or other songs that get circulated, just encouraging, the person or wishing the person well at during that particular period. But it's not just songs; it's also sometimes literary works. When you receive that, you may not necessarily know whether there's a copyright that particular work actually has, and sometimes you also pass it on to another friend or relative. This particular section of the bill then criminalizes that. I'm asking the question and I'm just requesting a response. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate.
Yes, this is one of those difficult things. We need to keep in mind that it is communication of the work to the public. So there is something specifically in respect of public. Some of those songs are already past the expiry marks, in other words, they are in the public domain and can be used. In respect of those, of course, there will not be any problem. The problem would perhaps be in the newer songs that might be distributed like that. So I suppose we need to, this is one of the things where I think intent is really very important. First off, you have that it must be to the public. So if it is to one other person that you are sending it, you could argue that, look, this is not to the public. I'm not putting it out there to the public. It is only A that is applicable, because you're not sending that song for the purpose that someone may download it and go and view the whole video at a later stage. The other thing that we also need to keep in mind is that these things that are circulated by Christmas is also not the whole of the song. Or I don't know, I think most of them have only a very small portion of a song. And so you will also have to look at that issue of fair practice and whether the reproduction of it is perhaps fair use. So there's a lot of things that come into play. It is not just a question that I think has a general answer. It will have to be in respect of each specific song. We'll have to see what the case is. But I think very important is that it is communicating the work to the public and the fact that you must know that you are infringing copyright in the work. So there's definitely intention that is called for here. But perhaps if I may just also ask Dr. Masocha just to maybe step in as well. And I know that they have more on, more in respect of practical examples. Then if she could perhaps add here. But like I say, I think it would depend on each specific individual case, how old the song is, if it is in the public domain, if it was to the public, you know, communication was made to the public, if you know there's infringing copyright. So yes, all of those things will have to play a role. Maybe if Dr. Masocha would like to add on that.
Doctor?
Thank you, Advocate, and thank you, Chair, and Honourable Sering. The issue is it's a very important one, Honourable Mr. Sering, because of what it means in terms of how we normally engage with information and some of the, like the example you gave us of sending a song during the Christmas season, but also the limits that the Advocate gave examples about is correct, because you may find that it is a song that does not fall within a copyright lifespan. It could be a song that falls under those that are made for free use. So it could be a free song. It could be a very short part of a song, not a full song. So the dynamic will differ. But I think this also goes back to that point about balancing the rights of the rights holders, the authors, versus the rights of the public in terms of usage. So this is a very, it's one of those amendments that we found very difficult, but we understood the comments that came from the public as well to say, this is a serious offense, it's a serious infringement. So if we say it only applies to commercial, for those that are for commercial, but then there could be actions that are taken and that implicates other parties and that also impacts on the rights of the rights holders and the authors and so on. So that was the concern to say, let me use an example of a song. That song is a new song and it's not meant, someone buys it, but then the others then get that song. It's then circulated in different social media platforms. It's also reused in other ways by other people. And then the person who's supposed to be getting the rightful remuneration for that is then is also affected. So there's harm. Harm can happen by certain acts that individuals undertake, and the implications are very serious. So we thought that this has got serious ramifications for those who are holding these rights and those who are innovators of these works. It also talks to the issue of education, that perhaps when this legislation is finalized, is put in the public as a law, we need to then start education drives to educate the public about circulation of other people's work, because that's income generated by those creators. And then when it's circulated, that's another implication. So we need to educate the public that there are these restrictions in terms of how you use somebody else's creation, because it talks to their income making capacity as well. So I think that, Chair, we did think about this thoroughly as a, from our perspective, and we looked at what the other stakeholders were saying about this, and we think that it is a serious issue that requires this kind of strong intervention. But there is a need also to educate the public about some of these implications of these actions. Thank you.
Thank you. Back to you, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I maybe also just want to add something else that might give maybe some comfort to Mr. Frink. In our law, we have, when it comes to criminal law, and I apologize for using the Latin, but I can for the life of me not remember the English, but I'll explain what it means. A principle of de minimis non curat lex. And what it means is that if something is really so small that it is almost insignificant, it should not constitute an offense. So, for instance, if you would pass on a Christmas message and it has perhaps a song on for it, there was no intention from your side. In fact, you didn't even know that you would be infringing copyright in the work. You just sent this little message that you received from someone else. If there is something where the person is then brought up on charges, all of these other defenses will, of course, apply. But you could also bring in that argument that this is so insignificant, that this is not even something that should be brought to a court. But yes, Dr. Masochi also said, it is something that was seriously considered. And when it comes to offences, I always caution, the committee will know, I've cautioned, we need to be very careful about what we make an offence. And the department is really of the view that this is serious enough that it should be for non-commercial purposes as well. If I may move on to the next one, I will come to those. There was just an issue of the paragraph, but that will be corrected. 5B. 5B deals with technological protection measures and if you use this and circumvent this. And a big question here was whether negligence should be a part of this offence. Now, here we've just made it subject to Section 28P, which means the allowed users in Section 28P will be an allowed defence if this a person is brought up on a charge under 5B. And then adding service, adding an effective, because that is what 28P says. But the big question here was whether a person, the question was between reason to believe should reasonably have known. That's why both appear here. But the question was whether negligence should be included. If negligence should be included, then the proposal was it should reasonably have known that it's used, because that is an objective test. But the proposal is that negligence not be included in this offence. We looked at a number of acts, and especially on dealing with these kind of things, specifically Cyber Crimes Act, and only intent is something that is used to form, to be an element of an offence. So our proposal here on 5B is definitely that it not be an offence. The proposal here at the bottom for this to be deleted is just because the fine appears in another subsection. It's the duplication. So, Chair, I think I'll pause there for now. On 5B, I think the big question is about negligence and not so much about anything else. Yes.
Okay, members, clarity or input? None. You may proceed, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Then the next offence is 5C. This deals with copyright management information. If I can quickly go there and here. 5C. There was a proposal in respect of verbs to be corrected, and we've done so. So you'll see all the little greens there. We made it for the singular. And then there was a proposal that we make it clear that a person should know when they do all of these things, that there would be an infringement of copyright. So in other words, make it clear that it's not something that you can do negligently. It is something where there is an intent required. So I'll just pause there, Jay. It's again the issue of negligence versus intent.
Thank you, members. No hands. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. The next is in respect of 28O. Now, here, it is simply consequential issues. So, in fact, I will probably go through all of them and then pause because it's now already dealt with. If we brought in negligence into the offences, then we needed to change the wording of 28O and S because you cannot have an obligation in the Act, but your offence is something different. You need to have the two aligned. But because we are recommending that negligence not be an offence, we are recommending that the wording of the bill has reason to believe be retained because the public was quite adamant that they would like has reason to believe to be retained in these two sections. So that is simply all that is happening there. There was also a proposal to remove the reference to the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act, simply because it has become irrelevant in the meantime. The same in respect of 28P, that the Electronic Communications Transactions Act has been already become irrelevant. 28P was also just a reference to be made to the specific regulations, so that is why the prescribed under is mentioned there. There's some neutral, gender-neutral drafting in these sections 28. 28S is the same issue in respect of reason to believe. If we don't have negligence as a crime, as an offence, then we can revert to reason to believe. So, Chair, let me pause there. It's the whole this whole clause dealing with section 28P, 28P, 28S, 28, just in respect of the Electronic Communications Act and then the issue of reverting to the wording of the bill because of negligence if that is removed from an offence.
Thank you. Members? Okay. You may proceed. There are no hands.
Oh, thank you. Sorry, I was on mute there. Clause 31, this one is just in respect of some subsection numbering that was incorrect. There were two subsections, two. So just to make the one to make clear, it is three, and then also some gender-neutral drafting. Clause 33 was in respect of correcting a cross-reference. It should be referring to section 28P. And then I'm not going to stop there. I think that was a really just technical amendment. Then 39, section 39, to provide for regulations. Now, these regulations speak to the authorized entities. I'll just make it a bit bigger so that the committee can see what we do. To say that the minister must, and this means that there's no discretion. Once this bill is passed and is an act and becomes operational, the minister will have to start making these regulations, providing for processes, formalities relating to this authorization or recognition of entities that provide these services, education, instructional training, adaptive reading, information access to persons with a disability on a non-profit basis. And then there's just a consequential amendment so that subsection 2 becomes 3, and then we just make it clear that before these regulations are made, and it will include these new ones in respect of authorized entities, the minister must publish them for public comment for a period of not less than 30 days. So I'll just pause there, Chair.
Thank you, members. No hands. Proceed. I hope it's not an issue of fatigue. Proceed, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, then Clause 35 has just some gender-neutral drafting. Chair, that is copyright. There's a few amendments to performance protection. Would you like me to go through them as well at this point in time?
we do, thank you, Advocate. We do have some time left, so I think if we can get through it, it's fine. You may proceed then to the Performers Protection Amendment Bill.
Okay, thank you, Chair. The first one is broadcast, and it's the same argument as we had in copyright, the issue of whether wire should be included or not, and our proposal is that wire should be included. So let me pause there. Probably it's discussed under copyright, it's the same principles, but just in case.
Yes, okay. Members? Okay, there are no hands, so... we had a fairly in-depth discussion under copyright, so I think members are covered. Proceed, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 2 is just some gender-neutral drafting. There was a lot of this in Performers Protection, actually. So here we can just delete his or her and replace it with their, because these are all insertions, so I will go through this very quickly. Clause 3, there's also some gender-neutral drafting. But then 3A, there is something here that is to be aligned with the treaties. The concern that was raised by people on 3A, and I'm going to just make it bigger so the committee can see the whole section, is that initially it said the written agreement must set out royalties or equitable remuneration in respect of audiovisual works and sound recordings. And the concern was that royalties don't apply to sound recording. So if you put it like that, if you just pop it all into one sentence, you might confuse people in thinking that royalties are also applicable to sound recordings. So the proposal is to separate the two types of works and make very clear what applies to what. So in other words, royalties or equitable remuneration will apply to audiovisual works, and equitable remuneration only to sound recordings. And this is then what must be set out in the written agreement. So I'll just pause there for a moment, Chair.
Thank you, members. Honourable Thring.
Yeah, just a explanation. So what the advocate is saying, Van Merwe is saying, is that for a sound recording, if I'm an artist, a musician, I go to a particular studio and I say, hey, look, can you record this for me? They record it. I'm struggling. I want to get my name out there. They say, hey, this sounds good. We sign up a deal. Because I don't have adequate representation, I'm desperate to get my name out there. The recording studio then runs with my work. It takes off, that sound recording actually takes off. It becomes a number one hit song, a single recording. And all I get is equitable remuneration and no royalties going forward.
Therein lies.
So that's my question, yeah. Chair.
Yeah. Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, that is the correct understanding. But if I may ask for maybe if Dr. Masutra maybe has something to explain, can explain what this difference is and why it is there, because that is how the industry works. But perhaps she is better able to explain why it is that the industry works that way.
Dr. Masutra?
Thank you, Chair and Advocate. From the equitable remuneration is the language that is used in the treaties. The applicable treaty talks equitable remuneration. And also another point one can make on this is that we were advised to ensure that when we refer to a scheme of payment for the works that are being performed or for the works that are provided by the creators or the relevant creators, we must make sure that we talk to the relevant scheme of payment that is applicable. So the that's why it's important to have this distinction. And there was a concern that the way we have applied the terminologies in the bill on remuneration, it's like we treat industries as if they are the same. We need to ensure that there are those distinction, hence this amendment. But it does not take away the fact that a person is this remuneration due to that particular creator or that performer or that particular creative person. So the term does not take away the fact that there should be a fair compensation, there should be remuneration that is made available. But as indicated, one of the things was to ensure that there is that alignment to the treaty language and also applicability to a specific industry, and ensuring that when we look at different works, we recognize how they differ amongst each other. So that's why it was important to bring in this distinction between the different types of remunerations applicable to the sound recordings and applicable to the audio visuals, just to make sure that we are aligned to the correct language when it comes to remuneration. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Proceed, advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, so clauses 4 and 5, just again some gender neutral drafting corrections. Some of clause 4 there, clause 5, a lot of the. Then clause 6 was just a correction. There was a word missing, the word into should have been added, and that is all that we do there. Clause 7 is again just the removal of the reference to the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act in both 8E and in 8F. And then also just in 8F to correct some gender neutral drafting issues. Actually, those are all the amendments to the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. Thank you.
Thank you. So that concludes our discussions for today. What we want to propose is that we once again allow members to go back to their caucuses, noting, of course, the input made by Honourable McPherson on behalf of the Democratic Alliance and by Honourable Mulder on behalf of the FF Plus. But for the rest of the committee, we are asking that we go back to our caucuses and then we'll come back for further deliberations. If the committee secretary can just reflect on the way forward in terms of these bills and then, of course, the next PC meeting. Mr. Cummins?
Chairperson, as you indicated, we have requested that members take the issues raised or presented by Advocate Van der Merwe and Dr. Masocha to their respective caucuses for consideration. And on our return, the committee will then start proceeding, considering this deliberation, and will take necessary time it requires for them to do so. In also keeping in mind the position that was expressed by Mr. McPherson and Mr. Mulder on the way forward. So the committee will then come to a decision on how we proceed, and then we proceed in that manner. Chair, in terms of the program, we are scheduled to meet next week on the 24th. Because this coming Friday, it is the budgetary debate, so we will not meet this coming Friday. And next week, Tuesday, we'll receive the fourth quarter report from the TTIC on the non-financial and financial performance, and also consider the position regarding the NLC chairperson for report to the House. And then on Wednesday, we will continue our deliberations on the Copyright Amendment Bill, which also includes the Performance Protection Amendment Bill, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you to everyone that has been present throughout these proceedings. The meeting is adjourned.
Long live, Chairperson. Long live.